Welcome to the Evocative Exchange, where we meet with go-getters who have that X factor, a way of meeting today's challenges with bold and evocative solutions. We'll share what keeps these experts thinking, thriving, and feeling inspired in design, entrepreneurial life, healthcare marketing, and beyond. Today on the Evocative Exchange, we welcome Susan Packard.
Hello, Donna. Nice to be here.
So happy to have you today, Susan. And I want to tell our listeners a little bit about your background.
All right.
Susan has achieved the best of both worlds in corporate and entrepreneurial. After coming up through the ranks of the male-dominated cable TV industry, she was one of the pioneers responsible for the launch of popular TV channels like CNBC, The Food Network. Susan also co-founded HGTV and Scripps Network Interactive. Today, she shares strategies and her lessons learned to mentor women and men in all stages of life at for-profit, at not-for-profit companies. She's written two books, and she's a sought-after speaker who engages the audience with her philosophy about how we can better understand ourselves so we make wise choices to achieve success and live with purpose. Now, Susan admits she will nudge you in her writing or in person to become more open, and totally prepared for that today. So I feel really privileged to talk with you today, Susan. I just want to learn more about how you see the world.
Yes, well, thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
So I mentioned a little bit in your opening about you working with these advertising giants, HBO, CNBC, HGTV. Like, what is it about your career that then enabled you to move on and work outside of corporate America now as a coach, speaker, and author?
Right. So I think I'd back up a little bit to answer that, because you did mention about how I nudge people to know themselves a little bit better. And sometimes that's a little bit after the fact. When I started at HBO, the business was just taking off. And so I was a part of the very beginnings of it. And we were owned by, you know, this enormous corporation called Time Warner. So we were creating this little business in this huge corporation. I was there several years, and then I go to CNBC, and we're starting a whole new division in NBC, which is owned by General Electric. But you see my pattern, I didn't even really recognize it in the very beginning, but I wanted to be at startups. I'm really entrepreneurial. It just so happened that I was located in these large corporations, but I never really felt the influence much of the large corporations, because we were starting these things from scratch. And so after that, when I got the call to join Ken Lowe as the second employee at HGTV, you know, again, we're starting from scratch, this I thought great idea for a business. We're still in a large company, but I figured at that point, since I could successfully navigate being entrepreneurial in a large company, that I would join HGTV and I would join Ken. So my point in all that is to say, you know, it's important, I think, especially for when I work with 20 to 30 year olds, a lot of times at universities and other places, I'll say to them, your 20s are for figuring this kind of thing out. You know, do I love being an entrepreneur? Would I rather be a part of, you know, a company that, in a sustaining capacity or in a growing capacity? All of those things. So I did a little bit of all of it, because at HGTV, I then, as the second employee, I was chief operating officer. So I had a lot of different departments, and eventually, you know, had hundreds of people. So I did both there. And to your question about, you know, how do you move to a completely different place? I really didn't. I had been mentoring all along, hopefully, you know, somewhat effectively, when I was working, as soon as I got into leadership jobs. And I was speaking all the time to shareholders or the, you know, divisions or departments or what, you know. So the only really different thing that I've been doing is writing books. And I'm not trying to downplay writing books, because that is an enormous undertaking, but it's really the only thing that I haven't taken from my years in media businesses.
I think there are such great lessons in all that you've said, Susan, especially for our young adults. And I think sometimes they wonder, how will I get experience? So for example, this year during social distancing, a lot of our college seniors couldn't execute their internships, right? They were canceled. And so I think that when you look at opportunities that exist in startups, entrepreneurial endeavors, clubs, organizations at the college, it sounds like people really need to dive in order to figure out what they really want to do. So I appreciate those comments.
Yeah. And I guess the only other thing I would add to that is don't get discouraged if you find, you get a job. Oh, that's so fantastic. I found a job. It's a good company. And you're there for a year or two and it just doesn't feel right. It doesn't fit you. Don't get discouraged. If you do a good job at that company, you'll be able to parlay that into opportunities in the future.
Right. And I think what that brings to mind is just because you're in a job doesn't mean you can't have something else going on the side. So whatever that club was that you belong to, maybe start that at your company now that you're out of college. Or if you do have an entrepreneurial idea, there's no reason why you can't have a little startup while you're in a corporate job. And so I think if people look into your background and your career, that to me is the real inspiration there.
Well, thank you. And I agree with everything you just said.
So let's talk about the books. You've written two books. The first one was called New Rules of the Game. That was a lot more about what you did in corporate and how other people could follow. And then another book called Fully Human. So I'm going to let you have that. Tell us about that.
Okay, great. And the other point about writing books, if anyone who one of your listeners wants to consider that, is it's a time sucker. So, for me, each of these books was 5 years. So it was really a decade of my life devoted to two books. But if you're going to, get a publisher, everything from writing a proposal through to being on a book tour is about, in between writing the book and doing your research, it's 4 to 5 years. But having said that, I've learned a tremendous amount in the course of what I originally thought was offering, information and guidance. And hopefully my books have done that. The first was, I'm right out of corporate. I just left HGTV. I'd been there 16 years. We'd grown the business into a $15 billion business. And I was at that place where I couldn't even believe I'd been anywhere for 16 years because I'm really such a startup person. And it was time for a lot of reasons. We had great management, great leadership, numbers were great, for me to do something new. And it wasn't really defined, but I started writing this book thinking, I kind of looked at it as a startup only, without people. And I wrote this book and it was for women, and it's very much a transactional leadership book. Both of my books are leadership books, but when I talk about transactional leadership, it's the skills, it's the technical expertise, it's those kinds of things that we absolutely must have, especially when we are in beginning and middle management jobs, to navigate our organizations. And so it was very how-to, very pragmatic. And I got, thankfully, quite a lot of good feedback about it. But after I wrote it, I sat back and I thought, your work is about more than a scorecard. It's about more than the P&L. It really, especially if you're creating cultures in organizations, it's the work of the heart. you know, and, you know, growing your own spiritual depth to be able to navigate those challenges and to build a real sustainable, healthy, emotionally healthy culture. So that, you know, in comes book number two, Fully Human. And I call that form of leadership transformative leadership. So the two together marry up into what I describe as fully formed leadership. And transformative leadership is very much right brain. You know, right brain is where compassion and connection and community, creativity, all of those are right brain. Whereas left brain is very logical, linear, analytical. So first book was very left brain. And by the way, it's how we function in our Western culture. We are we have these huge left brains, but our right brains are relatively small. So we have to kind of muscle them up.
That's quite an image, Susan. A lopsided brain.
Yeah, walking sideways. But so the second book was about what I call emotional fitness, which is the step above emotional intelligence. And this is where you get to a place of steadiness, peace of mind, and joy in the work you do. And you can build fantastic, sustaining cultures if you are in that place. But if your focus is always about the next minute, the next half hour, it's impossible. Because you have to take into account the larger organization if you want to move into a place of transformative leadership.
There's so much goodness here, Susan. I want to unpack it just a little bit.
Okay.
Going back to the first book after you had just left HGTV.
Right.
Do you think that you were influenced by their do-it-yourself type approach when you said the book was like a how-to?
Well, yes, I lived in that environment, you know, for 16 years. But I will also say that with Fully Human, I'm a pragmatic person. Yes. So even with Fully Human, I have exercises, I have quizzes, I have a fair amount of how-to, lots of resources. But yes, there's no question that living in that environment kind of makes you think a certain way.
I can see the pragmatism. I wrote down something I thought might be a quote, and tell me what you think of this. When you said, a book is akin to a startup, but without people. Should that be a quote that's out there somewhere from you? I mean, that was brilliant.
Thank you. It's not in, as I reflect on it, I don't write books about just my story, because that wouldn't fill a book. It's not interesting enough. So the books themselves have a lot of people in them. So it might not be the fairest way to characterize. Certainly the process is a very solitary one, even though you are doing interviews, you know, and whatnot. It is a solitary one. And, you know, you have to be comfortable with that kind of process.
You know, I think today our younger generation has found other ways to sort of tap into that market. Like you said, you know, giving 5 or 10 years, it was great that you had such a successful career. But I think looking at it from, you know, people that haven't yet had that career success, mm-hmm. I think that ebooks and podcasts and thought leadership are ways that people sort of, you know, dip their toe in the water.
Absolutely. And, you know, so many great periodicals today that are online will say this is a 2-minute read or 4-minute read. And I think that's very smart.
Oh, I do as well. Susan, earlier you mentioned a concept called fully formed leadership. And I started to think about these two books and how they come together as part of a larger idea. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, they come together. And both books come together to form fully formed leadership. And I had that sort of aha moment that these two books really are part of this bigger idea. And I debuted this idea last March, which was the last organization that I spoke publicly in front of, and most people who speak, you know, we've been doing Zoom and everything else, but it was in Philadelphia, and it was the CEO Think Tank, Cheryl Beth Kukler's group.
Oh, you know, that's how we met you, Susan. Sunny yes. White is the CEO of Xavier Creative House, is yes. actually a member of the CEO Think Tank.
Yes, and I got to meet Sunny, and I spent some time with her, and she's fantastic. And basically, the idea is you start your career, and then you get to sort of the middle of your career, and you're mostly in left brain, which is, you know, I have deadlines, I'm process driven, I have to be logical, analytical, all these things, and when you keep rising in leadership, and some people don't want to be in the C-suite, right. and that is fantastic. If you have that much self-knowledge. But I did seem to have an interest in continuing to move up. And so at HGTV, that job for me helped me to understand what transformative leadership is. So we go from transactional to transformative. And this is really where you take emotional intelligence to the next level. So EQ, emotional intelligence, in case you're not familiar with the idea, is two things. It's that you are you can read other people's emotions that you're working with well, and you can respond effectively to them. And the second part of it is that you can identify your own emotions and manage them well. And what occurred to me as I was leading, you know, I'm 39 years old, I'm COO of this monster growing company. What occurred to me is that I was really good at reading other people and their emotions, but terrible at recognizing and identifying my own. and so I had some work to do to move from that left brain sort of almost robotic leader to a more open, compassionate.
Susan, I think I want to highlight something that you just said, because most people think about understanding social cues when they hear emotional intelligence, but I don't often hear people talk about this second part. And I feel like that's really the crux of what you're saying. Having the ability, now that you're aware of the unstated message from this other person, managing one's own reaction and then using that to do a win-win. And I feel like this whole concept of emotional fitness is something that people really need to hear. So I'm excited to see where you're going with it.
Yes. And for me, at least, and it seems others that I've talked to when I've done my interviews and whatnot, as you're making your way up, and as a woman making her way up, you know, the expectations are really quite, you know, remarkable that others have of you as you're a female leader. And emotions, you know, when, especially when you're in a male dominated environment, you know, where do they even fit, right? So asking yourself those kinds of questions, but the more important part is being authentic, being open and authentic to your organization. And that's what I was lucky enough to embrace at HGTV. I had a great team that I worked with who were so trustworthy. And together we created values at that organization that were words like compassion, support, shared responsibility, diversity, all of these things. And not just slap them on the wall, but we also did our best to model them, because the moment you don't, they're worthless. You know?
I think it's amazing, especially if you can put it in context of what decade that was, right? Because today things are hopefully moving more in that direction, but being right. one of the first female executives, I'm sure you weren't allowed to have any emotions.
Yeah. And, you know, again, once I got my grounding, starting to work at HGTV with a really open team of people, having a great mission, you know, building this idea around home, almost a spiritual mission when you think about it, at least the ideal of home as we know it today. So that all came together very nicely for me. I had a great executive coach. Everything came together. But the emotional fitness part of it was I sort of had to recalibrate myself to get to that place of emotional fitness and be comfortable enough to be vulnerable enough, all of those things that are a part of emotional fitness.
You know, I'm thinking like, here you are at HGTV, you see this enormous best practice and you're like, this has got to be everywhere, right? So hence the two books. And now I think people and corporations are more aware of their obligation to have labor and human rights programming, sustainability initiatives, corporate social responsibility. And so I wonder how the concept of emotional fitness is like a solution of sorts to some of the issues that are plaguing corporations today, such that we need to be more aware of corporate social responsibility.
Well, there is that at all kinds of levels. And one that I would highlight is at the ethical level. Mm-hmm. I share this research with anyone who's willing in leadership, who's willing to listen. But PwC did a big study in 2018, and they looked at all of the CEOs who had been dismissed and why they had been let go. And over 50%, over 50% of them were let go for ethical violations.
Wow.
Not because of their P&L, how they manage their P&L. So, you know, you look at a company today like a McDonald's and how it is continuing to unravel. I mean, it's got the premier brand, arguably, you know, that, but the CEO is let go because of sexual harassment issues. Then the head of HR is let go. And then they start looking, going deeper, and the whole HR department is looked at and many are leaving. And then after that, there's a group of African-American franchisees who are suing McDonald's because of discrimination. This is what happens if you do not have ethical values in your organization. If you don't lead with them, your organization will fall apart. You think it's so sturdy, but it's actually very fragile. It's just made up of people.
Well, I think that when you look at policies, mission, vision, and value statements that big corporations put out, it's a pretty big leap from having that up on the wall to then having the skill building, the knowledge base, the conflict resolution that an individual might need to be truly ethical. This past week, I participated in the retreat with Xavier Creative House, and they actually had in a speaker on ethics to provide a certification for all of the employees. And I felt privileged to be involved in that, mm-hmm. because it really does come down to skill building. And so when I think about what you're doing with fully formed leadership and emotional fitness, what is the skill building that you think needs to be done in corporations to really get us on track?
Well, see, a lot of that is individual. An individual has to be accountable to themselves and to their organization. And that means that they have to live what Socrates called an examined life. They have to be looking at the decisions they're making. Are they good? Who does this decision benefit first? Does it benefit me first? Or does it benefit the organization first? So it's those kinds of very granular day-to-day decisions. As far as the larger organization goes, you model these things. So for example, if integrity is on the wall, if any one of the senior leaders is caught not being a person of integrity, then like I said, the organization is fragile and it can all unravel as far as the culture of the place goes. But there also are, it's like what you had, Donna. Isn't it fantastic that you had actual training around these various things, because it's out there. I mean, I was asked last week, I did a workshop, and I was asked about, you know, how do we get leaders to be more, have more of a sensitivity to inclusiveness?
Right.
And several others on the call said, well, we have training and workshops and things like that. So it's, you never stop learning. So it behooves the leaders of the organization to allow and give access to that learning.
I love the phrase examined life. I mean, I haven't heard it put just that way before, but I think it demonstrates really the seriousness and the personal level with which ethics needs to be examined. And amazingly, you know, emotional fitness and fully formed leadership is going after these types of issues. It makes me wonder, what else can it do? Like, what do you have in your sights for these concepts to address?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, emotional fitness is a part of the overall emotional health of an organization. And you might say they're really synonyms, but you don't find, you know, COOs of emotional fitness in organizations. We are starting to find COOs or presidents of emotional wellness, emotional health in organizations. And so that is moving forward, this whole idea that sweeps in so many things. But at the very core of it is there needs to be enough trust within an organization that the folks that are, you know, doing the work day in and day out need to have a trust relationship with that person, or if it's the HR department that's charged with the, you know, these things. Because unfortunately, often, you know, the HR department is bought and paid for by the CEO suite. And there isn't a lot of trust between those two. But, and so somebody could come in as an emotional wellness officer in an organization, and they need to build trust. And then they need to start offering all kinds of opportunities for wellness, for mental health, emotional health, you know, so that employees feel valued. And that is the key. At the end of the day, are you helping to have your employees feel valued?
And I think that sounds right in line with, you know, where the world is headed, trying to be more aware of social injustice. I know there's a wellness director at Xavier, and, you know, that's a commitment that, you know, Sunny White's making as a sustainable company.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I'm just, the one thing though, Susan, when you mentioned mental health, right? So is there any topic that's taboo, you know, because it's corporate America? Like, how do we go into those more sensitive areas, and what's the value to the employee base for doing that?
Well, I would say, what's the value to the leadership? You know, it's on both levels. If I were running a company today, there would be no taboo subject. There might be something that for other reasons we couldn't do. But for example, this is a small example. This is just one example. An affinity group that, let's say, folks are wanting to lose weight, and, you know, they're part of a Weight Watchers group, and allowing them to meet on premise during a lunch hour or whatever the case may be, believe it or not, there are still CEOs who would say, no, you know, that's too, we're sort of favoring one group over another group. And, you know, where does this end?
Wow.
What difference does it make? You know, I mean, what we're trying to do is support their emotional health and wellness. You know, alcohol. A guy who is very impressive about this is Mark Benioff, Salesforce.com CEO. And a couple of years ago, he wrote this note to his employees because he found that they had a policy of no alcohol on campus. And he found some kegs or beer or whatever in the refrigerators. And he said, hey, don't forget, you know, alcohol is a drug. Well, today, they have a what they call sober force, which is employees in the organization who say, they don't have to say I'm an alcoholic, they just have to say I don't want to drink, and they get together and they talk about that. And so none of these, you know, we may have thought that these should be taboo subjects, but if you feel that it helps you to build community in that organization, you should be open to it.
Well, I like when you said it's not just the obvious benefit to the employee, but the value to the leadership. Can you say more about that? Like, what is, how can we bullet that out so that people really get it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a simple P&L kind of calculation that you're going to retain more people when you value them. And therefore, you don't have to pay the cost of the churn that goes with hiring, rehiring, retraining. It's very expensive to do. So, you know, presumably you've done a good job at the front end of getting people that you, you know, that you admire, that you want to stay with you. And if that's the case, then you need to do what you can do to keep them, because they'll have other options. Maybe not at this moment in time with what's going on in the economy and whatnot, and I understand that. But a year from now, it's going to look very different.
I'm thinking back to when you said there should be like a COO of emotional wellness, but alas, there's not. So when I think about P&L, when I think about financial calculations, return on investment, I don't think it's that prevalent in corporate America to make the calculation that you just described. How do we influence that? How does that come to fruition? As you said, especially now in the aftermath of the health crisis, mm-hmm. and then, you know, the associated economic crisis, we are going mm-hmm. to get impacted with a lot of fallout. So how do we get that left brain idea into the leaders in corporate America so that they know what calculations to do?
Well, I've always been a fan of when the dust clears, ask the employees. So the employees have just gone through an incredibly difficult time emotionally. Most have been remote. Many are caring for kids, trying to teach them. They're trying to juggle far too many things. They're lonely. There are any number of challenges that they are facing. And when they get back into the workforce, I would just ask them, okay, you know, are there certain things that we could do to help you? Whether that's training programs, whether that's affinity groups, whether that's actual people in the organization that don't exist today. Now, it doesn't mean that you're going to accept everything, but when you build these things organically, employees to you, then it's much more authentic to what the needs of the organization are. I mean, so you can have the best ideas about what you want to do, but and I get back to, Donna, and I'm sounding like a broken record, but this whole idea of trust, having a trusting relationship between you and your boss, and then your boss's boss, and however it is you're organized, and within your groups, you know, how collegial are people within a group? And all of that's how you're going to be most successful. because that's where you can work. If you trust people, you can work with focus and speed, and you don't have to worry about some of that messy human drama stuff that can creep in.
You know, it's funny when you mentioned affinity groups, because I was also in corporate for 16 years and I left in 2000. So maybe around some of the same years that you were there, and we had affinity groups. But today, the new term is called social dialogue. And that's woven into the whole sustainability 2050 pledge platform for corporate social responsibility. I think that it ties so beautifully with emotional fitness and fully formed leadership. I just wonder, you know, is there another level? Like, is there a third book that can come out that can pull it all together even more?
Well, I am in the midst of a project now. I don't know if it's going to end up being a book, a video series. And all I'll say about it is, you know, how we can live our best lives. And it does bring everything together for a population of people that haven't been very well served. But I don't know what it's going to be. But yeah, and you know, there are lots of great leaders with great thinking out there. And I hope they're willing to write books or articles or somehow make themselves more accessible so that, because what you leave, the legacy that you lead an organization, is the next generation of leaders that come after you. And that's a huge responsibility. And so you got to get that right.
Well, I think to hear that you have a project in the works, if you can possibly get this concept of trust and listening to the people, as you say, when the dust clears, I think it'll be a very timely communication indeed. And I do think we are moving more towards moving pictures, you know, like books definitely have their impact, but now you have books on tapes. Everyone's listening to the book.
Absolutely.
So video series sounds right on point, Susan. And I mean, just thank such you. Great concepts that we talked about today. I really want to thank you for this conversation. And I know for sure that our listeners, that this is just the beginning of what they can learn from your perspective. And I just wonder, what do you think, what's the best way for them to find out more about your work?
Yeah, thank you, Donna. And the best way is they should just go to the website, www.susanpacher.com. And there they can take an emotional fitness quiz. And yeah, and they can learn more about the books and the work that I'm doing.
Well, that's great. We will be sure to include that link in the notes for the podcast. And thanks again, Susan, for joining us on the Evocative Exchange.
Thanks very much, Donna. Enjoyed it.
And to our listeners, this has been the Evocative Exchange that explores people and businesses that have that X factor that keeps you inspired and focused on what's possible. Thank you.